Welcome back. Almost done with the program. You're getting there. This is module 17, where I'm going to give you some specific examples for using this technology. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, and I want to congratulate you for having the perseverance to make it this far. 17 modules. You are a trooper. You're almost done, but keep in mind that even after you're done with this program, you can still review it. You can use it as reference material if you want to, for example, learn about suggestibility tests, dating, sales, negotiations, spiritual health, physical health, whatever you want to learn about, you can learn about it by refreshing yourself using these modules as a powerful reference library. So although you're almost done with the program, remember that you can always go back. You can do the whole thing again, or just use modules that you need to use to remind yourself of the powerful techniques. Okay, so let's look at some specific examples of using this technology. What about specific examples of using representational systems? What were representational systems? I know Steve talked about that a while back, but what were they? Well, remember, that's the visual representational system, the auditory representational system, and the kinesthetic representational system. What you want to do is determine which system a person's using. So what you're going to find is that pretty much everyone uses every system. There may be some person on the planet somewhere who doesn't use one of the systems for whatever reason, and that's okay. What you're going to find is that it's a bit of a challenge to find out which one they predominantly use, because most people will discuss things that can be heard, things that can be seen, and things that can be felt. Most people on the planet will discuss things in each of the systems. So you may wonder, how in the world am I going to determine their major modality? Remember, modality is synonymous with representational system. The way you're going to do this is by paying attention to what they're saying. Which one do they use the most? One of them is going to be more predominant than the other two. Then you have a lot that you can do once you've determined their representational system. You have a lot of actions that you can take. There's a lot of information there that's available to you. All you have to do is go back and listen to the representational systems module, and you will remember that if someone's visual, you start talking in visual terms. You start talking about things they can see. You can see yourself in that car. You can see the road ahead of you as you drive that car. You can see yourself 5 years from now in that car. So a car salesman or a car saleswoman, a car salesperson, is going to use the auditory words if they're dealing with an auditory person. You can hear your friend say, "Hey, nice car." You can hear the wind blowing past you as you ride in your car. You can hear yourself saying, "Wow, what a great buy I made." Now, if they're kinesthetic, they're more touchy-feely. If they're using the tactile senses, they're interested in what they can feel both physically and emotionally, then that means they're also into motion. You can feel the speed of the car. You can feel the engine humming as you sit in the car. You can feel it. And your legs and your body and your back, you can feel the engine humming, and you can feel that good feeling of driving that car. It just feels good to command that kind of power. So that's how you would work with someone who is kinesthetic. All right, what else did we look at as we look through what we learned and we remember it? We also find that we talked about pacing and mirroring. And what are those? Well, mirroring is a type of nonverbal pacing. So pacing means doing what someone's doing and saying what they're saying, or at least doing it in a similar way and saying it in a similar way. Mirroring is that part of it that's kind of like a mime. A mime doesn't talk, just does. So you're mirroring someone. Remember, if they raise their right hand to scratch their head, you raise your left hand, because that's how a mirror looks. A mirror image is the opposite. Look at the person in the mirror. You raise your right hand, they're raising their left hand. Why is that? It's reversed. Keep that in mind when you're doing what someone else does, when you're mirroring them. Does this mean that you're going to raise your hand immediately when they raise theirs? No, you're going to have a subtle delay. How much of a delay is too much? How much is not enough? You find out by doing your homework. So if you haven't done your homework in any particular module, now's your chance to repent. Now's your chance to go back and do it. Or if you did it and you don't remember, do it again. Homework is going to gain you a lot of mileage in terms of your ability to use this information. Okay, what else can you mirror about someone? What else can you imitate about someone without even talking? Remember, over 70% of our communication is nonverbal, no talking involved. So what else can you mirror? You can mirror their syntax, their breathing. What's the rate of their breathing? You can mirror that. You can slow down or speed up your breathing to match theirs. Their posture. Do they slouch? Do they stand upright? What's their posture like? Voice tone. Is it high? Is it low? Voice tempo. Is it fast? Is it slow? Their expressions. How they move their mouths, how they move their eyes, how often they blink. People tell me many times that I don't blink very often. And I'm not doing that on purpose. I just don't blink very often for whatever reason. Maybe it's my hypnotic stare. I don't know. But I don't blink very often. If you're dealing with someone like me and you find out that they don't blink very often, well, your eyes may get a little dry. It may be a little difficult to keep up with them. You may not want to do that, but you don't have to. Mirroring can be any number of activities. It doesn't have to be every single thing you notice about them. You don't have to be an exact replica of the person. What about crossover mirroring that we talked about? Crossover mirroring means that you're mimicking something about them in a different way. So for example, if my voice has a certain tempo to it, you can tap your foot to that tempo. What's the point of that? What's the point of any mirroring? The point is that you are going to feel that you are the same as someone who's doing the same things as you. So all this pacing, and the part of that pacing that is mirroring, all of it has to do with establishing rapport, getting someone to feel that you are similar to them. If someone feels that you are a kindred soul, that you're just like them, that you two are synchronized somehow, they're going to be more likely to do what you say, to follow your commands, to please you. So you're after control. That's the initial way that you can establish it, by pacing them. Okay, we also looked at embedded commands. Now, I want to talk about a specific example here of embedded commands that has to do with getting out of a ticket. How can you get out of a ticket? Well, hopefully, if you're pulled over by a police officer, you begin pacing them immediately. Not mimicking them, but doing things the way they do them. Talking in the same rhythm they talk. mimicking eye blinks unless they're wearing shades, or if you were wearing shades, breathing rate, how fast, how slow they're talking, anything you can pace, go ahead and pace. You also want to be very respectful. All right. Now, how can you get out of a ticket? Well, one of the ways that you can get out of a ticket is by giving the officer an embedded command. Conversation happens. You can say whatever you like. You have a right to say whatever you like. So you can have a conversation, a respectful conversation. But what are some of the words that you can weave into your conversation that will cause that police officer to not write you a ticket? Well, think about your goal. What is your goal? Your goal is to get out of the ticket. And it's always best to word things positively rather than saying, don't write ticket. You would want to word it positively. So your challenge, and I suggest you ponder this before you're pulled over and come up with your sentence or paragraph before you're pulled over. Maybe keep it written on an index card somewhere in your car. Your challenge is to come up with a positive way of saying that. How about, let me go? Okay, isn't that what's going to be on your mind anyway? Let me go. So you may want to play with this. You may want to come up with another phrase that you feel might be more appropriate. We can make that your homework for after the course. But let me go is good enough for now. Let's go with that, just so you can see how to develop this. Let me go can be easily hidden in the words that you're going to use. You can easily hide that phrase in the words. So, for example, you can start out by saying, I let my wife have the car yesterday, and she told me that the insurance papers were here. Ah, here you go. Okay, so the words are let me go. I let my wife have the car yesterday. She told me that the insurance papers were here. Ah, here you go. And you're saying that, of course, as you're finding them, and you're hiding it. Now, you can come up with your own three-word command for the police officer, but remember, you've paced him or her, you have delivered your command in a very clever way, and you can say it by saying those three words a little more loudly, let me go, or by tapping part of your body during each of those words, or any other way you want. Another way to get out of a ticket using conversational hypnosis, by the way, is to use authority. Now, I don't mean challenge the authority of the police officer. I mean use the whole concept of authority. A lot of times police officers have authority issues. They became police officers because they want to be in charge of something. And by the way, I became a hypnotherapist because I want to be in charge of helping people. And I'm into conversational hypnosis because I want to tell people what to do and get my way. And that's fine. Obviously, you and I have the same interest. So to say that cops want to have authority over someone doesn't make them bad and doesn't make them good. It just happens to be the case sometimes. Anyway, having said that, let's look at how we can use the authority issue with an officer who has an authority issue. And what I mean is, one of those police officers who just loves to write tickets because they can, because they want to dominate others. If you're dealing with a situation like that, then here's the sentence for you. Officer, I understand that even if you had the authority to override this, you probably wouldn't. Now, what have I done? I've thrown down the challenge. Let me repeat that. Officer, I understand that even if you had the authority to override this, you probably wouldn't. Now, it sounds like I'm saying, don't override it. But I'm really not. If you listen to those words, and if you have an officer who's got authority issues, then you've thrown down the challenge. What you're saying is, hey, you don't have the authority to override this, do you? That's what you're basically saying with the first part of your sentence in a very clever way. You're not asking him or her to let you out of the ticket, even though you secretly are. You're just stating the, quote, obvious, that they wouldn't do it. Well, at first when they hear that, they probably think, you're right, I wouldn't. Then they start to pick it apart. Wait a minute. If I had the authority, I have the authority. I am the authority. That's why I pulled you over in the first place, they're thinking. I have the authority. I'm going to show my power and override this ticket. I'm going to let this person go. So again, the phrase is, officer, I understand. Even if you had the authority to override this, you probably wouldn't. And you can say override this speeding ticket or override this felony charge. No, I'm just kidding. But you can use it to get out of speeding tickets and running red lights and so forth. And I would hope that you're going to change your ways and stop speeding and running red lights and committing felonies, whatever you're doing. But keep that in mind, that you can use that. I'm not saying that every officer is the same, but in many cases you'll run into the authority issue. You're going to be dealing with someone who's got an authority issue. How can you deal with them? So now you have a technique. So you have used pacing. You have paced the officer. You have used your embedded command. And what else can you do? Well, firing off your anchor for confidence would be a great idea. So you have something that you've told yourself, a phrase, and you have emotion. And when you fire them off, you remind yourself of how confident you are. But also you want to anchor that officer to you being a good person. So you can say something such as this. Officer, I appreciate you serving the good people of this city. Now, keep in mind, you don't want to overdo it. If you have a high amount of cheesiness in what you're saying, it's going to work against you. But while you're saying good people, you're touching your chest area. Ladies, you can play with your necklace or adjust your blouse or what have you. But you're touching that area right around your solar plexus. Okay, so you want to have the officer anchored to you as being a good person. All right, let's move on now. Let's get you out of being pulled over for whatever it is that you did. Hopefully you'll never be pulled over the rest of your life, just in case. There you go. All right, and don't use that for felonies, by the way. If you've committed a felony, I think you need to go in. You need to be taken downtown and booked. But if you find yourself making a minor infraction, why not have some fun? All right, let's look at the next topic, eye accessing cues. Eye accessing cues are very helpful, especially in the realm of figuring out if someone's telling the truth or not. It can be a lot of fun, and it can undo relationships sometimes to find out that someone's not quite in the up and up. Or it can be rewarding to find out that they are telling the truth. Now remember, we looked at that in detail in the module on eye accessing cues. If a person is normally oriented, that means when you're facing them, you're going to see them looking certain ways. It's going to give off cues. Up and to the right. Now this is to their right or to your left. So up and to the right for them means visually created. They're creating something visual. So if you find out they're normally oriented and you ask them what they saw at the concert last night and they don't look up and to the right but they look up and to the left, well, that's visual remembered. So that's good. They're remembering something from the concert. If they're looking up and to the right, they're creating something, visual created. That's not what you want to see. You want to find out what happened. If they're looking up and to the right and they're normally oriented, they're creating something visually. They're making it up. They're coming up with a story. If they're looking up and to their left, they're remembering something. Of course, the way to test this is to ask simple questions that you know the answer to. Make sure you know the person you're dealing with. So you could ask them to remember what their first car looked like. If they're normally oriented, they're going to look up and to their left to remember this. If they're oppositely oriented, they'll look up and to the right. Some people look straight ahead, and so you won't use this technique on them. Isn't that annoying? They're trying to use eye accessing cues, and the person's staring straight ahead, either because they know about the cues or there's some other reason why they just look straight ahead. But most people will use eye accessing cues. It's a great tool. What if someone looks to the left or to the right horizontally? Well, if they're normally oriented and they're looking to their right horizontally, it's audio created. What did the concert sound like last night? If they look to their right horizontally, they're making it up if they're normally oriented. They're creating something auditory. If they look to the left, they're remembering something auditory. What did it feel like to be there? Well, hopefully they're looking down to the right. That's kinesthetic if they're normally oriented. That's feeling, touching something, feeling something emotional, or having motion, moving. Any of those three will be down to the right if they're normally oriented. If they're oppositely oriented, it'll be down and to the left. And again, you calibrate this by asking questions that you already know the answer to, or you already know which way they should look. First car, if they had a first car, should have a color, so they should be looking, if they're normally oriented, up and to the left. They're remembering it. First time they heard the Beatles, if they have heard the Beatles, should be a memory. If they're normally oriented, they're looking horizontally to the left. They're remembering that. The feeling of riding a bike the first time. You remember, for me, the first bike ride wasn't so great. But the feeling of riding a bike for the first time should be looking down and to the right. Kinesthetic. How did it feel? How did the wind feel in my hair? How did that tree feel when I smacked into it? Kinesthetic. All right. Then we took a look at anchoring. And anchoring has a couple different applications. Number one, you can create an anchor for yourself. You can remember a time in your life when you felt great. Feel it at a peak state. Remember all the sights, sounds, smells, feelings, everything about it. Feel it at a peak state. And then make a motion and a sound. And that anchors those amazing, powerful feelings to that motion and that sound. So next time you make that motion and that sound, you fire off that anchor. You have access to those feelings. And you can create an anchor for creativity by remembering a creative time in your life. Motivation by remembering a highly motivated time in your life. You can create an anchor for anything. What about creating an anchor that's going to cause people to believe that you have certain attributes? Well, just like when dealing with the police officer, all you have to do is touch that area around your solar plexus while you're saying the word that you want people to believe has to do with you. I'm talking about someone else. I'm talking about how motivated they are. And when I say the word motivated, I'm touching my chest. That's anchoring that person to the idea that I am motivated. Anchoring the concept of motivation to me in that person's mind. Pattern interrupt. We looked at pattern interrupts in detail, and we looked at the different types of pattern interrupt. If someone's saying something, you can interrupt them with an odd statement, something that gets their attention, not too odd. Don't say, hey, is the world going to end? Or anything like that. You don't want to scare them or freak them out or make them think that you're off your rocker, but you do want to get their attention. So it has to be something that gets their attention. If you're out at night and it's a starry night and you're with your date, for example, and you say, hey, was that a shooting star? Well, that commands attention. People are interested in shooting stars. Or was that a UFO? Even better, even more attention. That interrupts the pattern that they're in. They were talking about something. You've interrupted their pattern. And then you can redirect them. You can change the conversation. That's one approach. You can give them a direct command, do something. That's another approach. Or you can put them into hypnosis by saying sleep. Now, we didn't talk a whole lot about that. What do you do with someone in hypnosis? Well, you do things that are good. You don't cause the person to do something that would be harmful to themselves or that would degrade them. but they are in hypnosis. So the pattern interrupt has happened. You've said sleep. They're in hypnosis. So now you can give them direct suggestions in hypnosis if you want to. You can tell them to do certain things in hypnosis. Hopefully you're going to use your powers for quote-unquote good. I said at the beginning of this that I don't believe in quote good or quote bad, but certain things are understood to be legal and certain things are understood to be illegal. And I'll just leave it at that. What else have we looked at? What else have we learned? Well, suggestibility tests. We also learned about suggestibility tests are very helpful in determining who might be a good candidate for a pattern interrupt, for example, because you want to make sure that the person you are working with is going to accept these suggestions. If you do a pattern interrupt on someone, you say, hey, look at that UFO, and then sleep. If they're not very suggestible, they're going to look at you as if you've lost your mind. What UFO, and why are you saying sleep? But if you do a suggestibility test beforehand and find out they're very suggestible, well, then that takes all of the guesswork out of it and makes your job a lot easier. So a suggestibility test can be something very simple. You can say, hey, I learned this neat trick from Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, or from somewhere else, and I want to share it with you. And you can have them interlace their fingers, press the thumbprints on their thumbs together, you know, the flat part of their thumbs, have them press them together. And you can say, because your thumbs are pressed so tightly together now, it is impossible to pull them apart. Try as you may, you can't pull them apart. It's impossible. And if you find that they can't pull their thumbs apart, you can then say, and when I snap my fingers, you will be able to pull your thumbs apart. Then snap your fingers, and their thumbs come apart. Kind of adds the extra sizzle to the whole situation. So you've told them their thumbs are stuck together, their thumbs were stuck together. Then you told them that their thumbs would come apart, and they did. Now, this is a suggestibility test. This tells you how suggestible someone is. You may think the first time somebody passes the test, and their thumbs are stuck together, you may think they're faking it. You have to trust that a certain percentage of people on this planet are simply that suggestible. Now, they're a little difficult to come by because they're about maybe 10% of the population. Most people will not be that suggestible. That's why when a stage hypnotist does his or her show, they have a lot of times everyone raise their hands above their heads with their fingers interlaced, and they say, your fingers are stuck together. Most people pull their fingers apart from their other fingers easily because they're not stuck together. But some people, about 10%, have their fingers stuck together. So if a stage hypnotist has about 100 people in the audience, he or she can easily find 10 people to come up on stage. If they have 1,000 people in the audience, they can find 100 people to come up on stage, and then they can pick and choose. And if at any time a person doesn't follow the stage hypnotist's commands, they're asked to leave the stage. That's how a stage hypnosis show is done. And then the tasks which the hypnotist will have the person do become increasingly ridiculous, and eventually you have them thinking that they are Madonna. Those shows, although you may think that the people are faking it, are usually true, because the stage hypnotist has easily found the people who are highly suggestible and has them up on stage, and then he or she does whatever they want to do with them. So suggestibility tests can be very powerful. Now, I want to tell you something I didn't mention before, and that is that telling someone to do something directly can be very powerful. If you have someone who's passed your suggestibility test, you can just tell them what to do. Give them commands. Tell them what to do. And they're going to do it. Even if you think the person is faking the suggestibility test, go with it. Start telling them what to do. Even if they were faking it, which is possible, they still did what you told them to do. their thumbs were still together, even if they were faking it, what makes you think they won't continue doing what you tell them to do? So what if they're faking it, they're still doing it? What's the difference? They're going to do what you tell them to do. And most people are not faking this. When they pass a suggestibility test, it's actually legitimate in most cases. All right, so you have all kinds of tips for dating. Self-hypnosis. We looked at self-hypnosis, and specifically, you can hypnotize yourself for confidence, for motivation, for creativity, for a sense of humor, for a sense of adventure. Hypnotize yourself to love life. Hypnotize yourself to be like your favorite celebrity. Hypnotize yourself to be a very outgoing person. These are specific things that you can do with self-hypnosis. Physical health. Physical health is vitally important, just like spiritual health that we also talked about. If your physical health is lacking, then you need to attend to it. Now, if you have a chronic condition, that's one thing. If you're simply overweight, or you smoke, or you're not in shape, that's another thing. Some things perhaps you don't have control over, but some things you do, and you know the difference. Spiritual health, find time for yourself. Relax, meditate, focus. I think what you're going to find is that when you do all of those things, you're going to be better prepared. Think now about all the things that you can do that would be fun. What would be fun? What could you do that would be fun? Think about those things. That's your challenge with spiritual health, because those things are going to add to your health to make you a whole person, so that when you address someone, whether by phone or email or text or in person, they're going to get the sense they're dealing with a whole person, a grounded and well-rounded person. So that's vitally important to your spiritual health. Sales negotiations, we looked at that in detail, and you now have a lot of different techniques that you can use in a sales negotiation. So you want to make sure that you rehearse your techniques. Make sure you understand them. Make sure you know them cold. Sales mastery. You will be a sales master, but you need to make sure that you're rehearsing your specific techniques. So my point with all of this is review, review, review. Go over everything. Make sure you have a thorough understanding of it. All right. So in going over the summary, I want you to remember that you can add other powerful techniques that you think of, or maybe you think of variations of these techniques, but in your filing system in your mind, file them. Ah, it's a pacing technique. That's an embedded command technique. That's a dating technique. That's a negotiation technique. Ah, that's something that I learned at a seminar that I can use as a spiritual relaxation technique. Start thinking of your conversation as having many different components that make it powerful. And as you go through life, continue to add to these components. You know, this program also comes with an ongoing monthly module that will come to you. If you want to sign up for that, take advantage of it, please go ahead and do so. I'll be happy to be your tour guide ongoingly to continue giving you information, updating you with the most current breakthroughs, because conversational hypnosis is constantly evolving. As our society changes, as technology changes, new possibilities open up. Texting wasn't even possible a few years ago. It didn't exist. Now it is. Who knows? By the time you listen to this, it could be something else, another way of communicating. All right, let's look at some other techniques, other examples, other things you can use, which I'd like to offer at this point. Future pacing. Now, pacing is doing something that someone else is doing. And then leading, if you'll remember, is getting them to do what you're doing. That's when you know you're in the driver's seat. You've been doing what they're doing. Now it's time to see if they'll do what you're doing. Oh, they are. Okay, great. Now you're in charge. Future pacing is something in addition to those things. Future pacing means that you are putting the person you're talking to into the future in which they can see themselves doing something. Now remember, you want to tap into their major modality, their major representational system. If they are mostly auditory, then you can tell them that in 5 years from now, they can imagine themselves in that home that you're trying to sell them, listening to the birds in the backyard, if they like birds. If they're visual and you're trying to sell them a home, they can see themselves 5 years from now with the grandchildren playing in the backyard, if they're of that age. If they're kinesthetic, then they can imagine themselves a year from now in that home, walking barefoot, hand in hand, in the freshly cut grass. Future pacing puts that individual in the future that you create for them. It's not the future that would ordinarily happen if they didn't do what you say. It's the future that results from following your command. Since that is their future now, in their minds, they're going to do what they can to create that. Future pacing can be used in dating. An hour from now, when we're enjoying the lovely moonlight of the beach and walking hand in hand and feeling the warm, soft sand on the soles of our feet, I think that'll be great. So you're obviously with someone kinesthetic. You're obviously in a dating situation. You're trying to create that future for them where at that time they will be with you on the beach. If it's a sales situation, create the time when they will be using your product. They will be hearing it, seeing it, or feeling it depending on their representational system. Future pacing can be very powerful. Another technique that can be very powerful is expectation. Another technique we haven't talked about yet, expectation. And the way I like to use expectation is like this. Let's say you're selling Girl Scout cookies. This can be used for children too. You're selling Girl Scout cookies. And you say something to the nice man who answers the door, something to the effect of, "Hello, I'm selling Girl Scout cookies," so forth and so on. And at a certain point in the conversation, you say, "Most people buy 5 boxes. Aha. Now he knows what's normal. Now he knows what's expected. Most people do this. If you're on a date, let's say you're in a traditional date, you're a lady being taken out on a date, and you're talking about the date ahead of time, you can say, "Well, most men enjoy taking me to a fancy restaurant." You haven't said, "Take me to a fancy restaurant." You've just put a seed in their head, a seed of expectation. Think of the opposite. "Most men take me to a fast food joint," or, "I don't know, I go wherever they go, wherever they want to go." Why not take charge of the situation? "Most people do this." That's the way you work with expectation. Expectation gives the person a template of what is expected without being rude about it. You haven't told them to do anything. You haven't even told them that you expect that of them. You're just giving them some helpful information. If you go around collecting money for a cause, most people donate $20,000. This person could have been thinking of donating $100. Now they know most people donate $20,000. Don't you think they're a little more likely to give a little more than $100? After all, most people give $20,000. My mere $100 isn't going to quite amount to much, so I want to have the perception that I am a worthy person. People want to feel good about themselves, and in many cases, they want some guidance. You're going to be amazed as you go through life using Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis. You're going to be absolutely amazed at how many situations you actually help out. You're going to help out a lot of situations because so many times people get stuck. They want to know what to do. They want to know what the next move is, but they're not sure what it is. They don't know what's expected. They don't even know really what they want. You're going to tell them what's expected and tell them what they want, which is really what you want, but you're going to tell that to them. In some cases, it will be by directly telling them. In other cases, it will be more covert, more hidden. In fact, in most cases, with Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis, it will be hidden. You're going to save people a lot of time because you're going to get them to an action more quickly, an action that you want them to take. But people want to be directed. Trust me, as a hypnotherapist who's got over 20 years of experience, people want direction. That's one thing that people lack in their lives. They lack, many times, intimacy and a feeling of contributing to the world, but they also lack direction. Some people don't even know what to do when they get up in the morning. They wish someone could tell them. Many of those people join the armed forces, and that's fine. The armed forces tell them when to get up in the morning, what to do, where to go, how to dress, when your free time is, when it's time to go back to work, etc. Well, people who get jobs, any job, are the same way. They like to be told what to do. You may be one of those people. You may relate strongly to that. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as the person or people telling you what to do know what they're doing and they have your best interest in mind. But it's such a basic instinct to want to be told what to do. You are going to help people and you're going to help situations by giving direction. You're filling a void. People will wander around aimlessly if you don't tell them what to do or suggest what to do. They look to others for guidance. That's why there are bosses. That's why there are leaders. This is a good situation. This is the way things should be. There should be bosses and leaders telling people what to do as long as they're telling them the right things to do. So I want you to be comfortable with the power that you have, the power of Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis. You're getting things done. You're freeing up people's time. So enjoy it and have fun with it. I hope you now have a better perspective on conversational hypnosis with this overview, with this review, which I hope you have found to be helpful, and I'm sure that you have. And what is your homework for a review module? Well, your homework is to go back over all of those things that I mentioned that seemed kind of fuzzy in your mind. Wait a minute, did he mention pacing? I seem to recall some of that, but I'm not sure. There's a lot of information in this program. The representational systems, I gave you lots of words that you can work with for visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. How many of those do you remember? How many of those words do you remember that you can look for? Do you remember the pyramids we talked about, the food pyramid? You remember the pyramid I talked about when we talked about using powerful words? Okay, there are a lot of different things in this program that you may want to review. So do that. That's your homework. Anything that seemed kind of fuzzy to you, go ahead and review. I want you to go ahead and make sure that you have a powerful understanding of all of the information that's included in ultimate conversational hypnosis, and realize that if you follow all of the modules, you're going to redesign yourself from the ground up. Remember, you're like an iceberg. Most of who you are is hidden to your subconscious mind. It's beneath the surface. 90% or more of who you are is hidden. It's in your subconscious mind. With ultimate conversational hypnosis, you can rebuild all of that and the part that's your conscious mind, because you're addressing your spiritual health, your physical health, and all of the techniques that you're going to need to use. So you're going to be a well-rounded and well-grounded person. All right, so do your homework, review whatever it is you need to review, and then join me in the next module. And we're going to have even more fun and learn even more things that are going to make you powerful, make you amazing, make you wonderful, absolutely unstoppable in any situation. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, hoping you have an outstanding day.